Hi, I'm Jack R. Johnson, and you're listening to an extended version of Hidden Histories. I'm in the studios today with Dr. Alan Enten.
And we're here to talk about the Spanish Civil War and America's part in the Spanish Civil War, and in particular, Alan's Uncle Bernard, who participated in the famous Abraham Lincoln Brigade. Alan, welcome to WRAR, and welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Jack.
So in a nutshell, the Spanish Civil War really kicks off in 1936 by Generalissimo Francisco Franco, who decided he cannot stomach the fact that Spain is no longer ruled by the monarch. The king was King Alfonso III. He abdicated, and the Spanish Republic was born. But Franco didn't like that, neither did the church, the Roman Catholic Church, nor the landed gentry, the oligarchic families that had lots of wealth and had historically always controlled Spain. So they viewed the Spanish Republic as kind of an upstart democracy, if you will. Hitler and Mussolini both funneled money and, most famously, arms to Franco in the military uprising. Hitler provided Franco with the famous Condor Legion, and then there were also the Moroccan troops that came to assist Franco. The Republic was defended by international brigades. That is folks, a lot of times workers, unionists, anarchists, and communists from all over the world that came to defend the Spanish Republic. And your Uncle Bernie was one of those people. The fascists, of course, under Franco, were guilty of horrible massacres. Guernica is probably the most famous of which we know by the painting that Picasso did of the firebombed village. We also know that Federico Garcia Lorca was murdered by the right-wing military, and there are many other massacres as well. But tell us a little bit about your Uncle Bernie and the Brigadistas.
People from all over the world joined forces in Spain. They volunteered. Mm-hmm. That meant they went of their own free will. They had to figure out how to get to Spain because their governments wouldn't allow them to go on government passports. They didn't send them there. They didn't pay for them to get there. They had no training and no money. They were volunteers. They didn't get paid fight there.
Wow.
That's why it was idealistic.
Yeah.
They were doing this because they believed in the cause. And as we're going to see later, we're going to talk about, I'm sure, that my uncle and many of these people were union activists. They believed in the power and equality among people and defended that. So when this war came, they were set to go to Spain and defend them.
So the time period now, just for our listeners, 1936, you're pretty deep into the Depression at that point in time. You've got union activists and a kind of New Deal activism going on, at least at the political level in the United States, but there's still a large amount of unemployment. And then you have this war kicking off in Spain. And I guess, and I'm trying to get my head around what the attitude then is, I guess the folks in the United States, some of the young men who are unemployed perhaps, or just idealists, are looking at this like an opportunity to actually help change the world.
Absolutely. And at that time, communism was seen as a very idealistic belief system, and they all were communists because they believed that this was a way to make the world better. And the International Brigades was formed in October 1936, which would be 75 years ago this fall.
75-year anniversary coming up on the International Brigades that went to Spain to help defend the Republic. Wow. It's going to be a big party. They have, I guess you've done some research on this, they have organizations both in Spain but also in the United States as well, right?
Yeah.
And some of the organizations, the veterans of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, for example, I guess is one in New York City?
Yeah, well, it's a national one.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the Brigadistas who fought in the war as veterans are mostly gone now. There's just a handful left. And they'd be in their mid to late 90s now.
Wow.
So it's really transformed into friends and family of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. And then there's the archives of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade dedicated to preservation, research, education about the Spanish Civil War.
And you've, in addition to that, I guess, you've also taken trips to Spain and talked to relatives, at least, of folks that have fought against Franco and perhaps traveled with relatives of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade people.
Yeah. And met with many people who were parts of international organizations in England, in Spain, Germany, Russia, China, and all over the world who were parts of the international brigades and who are active in their local associations now. And wherever we've gone on to meet people, they are just absolutely thrilled to meet us and meet people who whose relatives have given their lives and to support the democracy in Spain. So there was memorials in Teruel, in Jarama, and in Brunete, which published articles about our trips and my uncle. So it's really just fascinating that to see them honored this way that they hadn't been in their lifetime.
And in the United States, it's I guess much quieter, if it's spoken about at all, right?
Yes, and recently a couple of years ago, a memorial was put up in California, in San Francisco, to honor the Abraham Lincoln Brigades.
So, one of the things that strikes me as really remarkable about the difference between the generation of the folks that were fighting in the Spanish Civil War and the generation of the baby boomers who had the Vietnam Wars, they seem to be a complete opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of fighting in the war, and yet politically they're not that distant, right? Can you talk about that a little bit? It just seems really interesting to me.
I think this is the Spanish Civil War. They were all volunteers. They did it of their own free will and volition. It was something they believed in, and no one had to make them go. They weren't recruited, drafted. They were all volunteers because they believed in the cause. And that was the thing that really was different about this war. They were all volunteers. They believed in that cause.
Right. And this is coming directly after World War I, which, you know, ostensibly was the war to end all wars.
Right.
And it got some pretty negative press, right? And there's still kind of long citing it and seeing that, okay, if we don't stop Franco now, we're going to end up in another big one.
And if only England and the United States, who actually covertly were sending supplies which really went to Franco.
So there are capitalist elements within the United States, Great Britain, and so forth.
Who were supporting that, Franco. Absolutely.
But
And had they stopped back, had the war gone on a little longer, people were beginning to see that what was happening, and the tide may have been reversed.
One of the things that I don't know if is emphasized enough is that the church, which was very powerful within Spain at that point in time,
absolutely,
was part of what was considered a conservative league or conservative coalition. You had your military under Franco, had the church and some of the large oligarchic families that were all bound together in a right-wing coalition that were opposed to the Spanish Republic in general.
Absolutely.
You know, the church accused the Republic fighters of actually trying to destroy the church, and there were anecdotes, anyhow, of anarchist bombing churches, that some churches were burnt down. Can you speak a little bit to that?
It was much like the Civil War here, of family against family.
Right.
And so, you know, within the town, it could be both sides were polarized in the one town or the one family or the...
Another interesting thing is, you know, in our Civil War, the American Civil War, we did have family against family in some instances, but geographically speaking, anyhow, we did at least have the Mason-Dixon line. We did have a sense of the North was one side, the South was another side. Did you have that kind of geographical divide in Spain?
I don't think so, from what I've been able to ascertain. I think it was... I know that when I was in Madrid for the 70th anniversary, they showed us the bombing of University City, where not only was there fighting horizontally, meaning one block versus another block, but in the university, it was also vertical, so that one floor versus another floor.
So, you know, the third floor was at war with the first floor or whatever.
Or supported different sides, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
And I guess that's really the ultimate growth of academe, right, for bureaucratic infighting among the academics, right?
Yeah, right. True.
This is WRIR 97.3 FM on your radio dial. You're listening to an extended version of Hidden Histories with Jack R. Johnson.
Viva la quince brigada. Viva la quince brigada. Que se ha cubierto de gloria, ay Manuela, ay Manuela. Que se ha cubierto de gloria, ay Manuela, ay Manuela. Luchamos contra los moros, luchamos contra los moros. Mercenarios y fascistas, ay Manuela, ay Manuela. Mercenarios y fascistas, ay Manuela, ay Manuela.
Hi, this is Jack R. Johnson. I'm here in the studios today with Dr. Alan Enten, who is a clinical psychologist in the Richmond, Virginia area, who has an independent practice here. He also has an uncle who has fought heroically in the Spanish Civil War, and Dr. Enten has done an enormous amount of work researching this. One of the things about Bernie, or Uncle Bernard as you call him, Alan, is he seems like such a character, and I guess you knew pieces of him before you actually did the research of him, just from anecdotal stories that you heard from your family and so forth. And Harry Fisher wrote this book, Comrades, and I just wanted to, for the listeners, read a little snippet of a description of your uncle, because it seems to capture in some ways a quality of your uncle that I think is really interesting. Anyhow, this is Harry Fisher writing about Bernard Enten. At the time that he was a union activist for the Department Store Workers Union, and this is in New York City, quote, he's not too tall, but sturdily built. He was a tough yet gentle, loyal, and wise young man. He was one of the most militant members of the Department Store Union, yet he too had been arrested many times in the picket line, and we had spent time in jail together. And Butch, and that's what Harry Fisher called him at the time, was Butch. Butch was a good-looking, husky, curly-haired guy who was tough as nails. Tough, yes, but gentle and compassionate as well. He was someone you wanted on your side. And fortunately for us, we had him on our side. And, you know, I'm listening to this description from Harry Fisher, and it's like you can almost hear the New York accent coming through in his writing. Later, he tells a little anecdote about Bernie, and it's this run-in with a police officer. Can you describe that a little bit?
Once during the Depression, when Bernie and Harry Fisher were riding the rails, there was a woman there who was stopped by a policeman, and he was threatening her and issuing all sorts of racial remarks towards her. And my uncle, not liking that, said to the cop, "Why don't you be more respectful of her?" And the cop said, "Mind your own business." My uncle said, "You're nothing but a coward. You shouldn't pick on her. You should be more respectful. Well, the cop pulled a gun on my uncle.
Oh, my God.
And my uncle just looked at him and stared him down. And the cop finally just walked away muttering to himself.
Huh. So your uncle didn't take much beat from anybody, huh?
No, he didn't.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I think you mentioned earlier is that when you were doing your research, you did find some entries in the New York Times even mm-hmm. about Uncle Bernie. Is that right?
Yeah. I found two articles that were on the front page of the New York Times back then of union activities where my uncle was trying to put out strikes, organize strikes against Woolworth and Orbach, a department store, to get them to unionize their activities.
Wow. And that's impressive that, here's this fellow who
barely 20.
Yeah, and 21. He's already on the front page.
I mean,
it was the front page, you said.
Yeah, front page. I was impressed.
So above the fold or below the fold?
It's an old paper. I wonder.
He manages to get to Spain. Now, he does this aboard a ship, but there's no record anywhere,
there's no record.
Apparently.
It's hard, no.
So,
right.
What happens to these records? I mean, what's the theory?
I don't know. I couldn't find. I spoke to an archivist. I don't know.
Huh. You know, some of the folks that were going over to Spain, they apparently they changed their names as sort of a matter of course. What's the rationale behind that?
Well, I think most of them, if not all of them, changed their names because the United States officially had a policy of neutrality, and many of them, if not all of them, were communists, union organizers, communists, idealists, and they went over. And they were told to change their name so their activities in Spain would not hinder them when they came back.
Or affect their family, maybe?
Or affect their family, maybe, when they came back to America. So they went under aliases.
Right. And now your Uncle Bernie was a member of the Communist Party. The
Young Communist League.
Young Communist League, okay. And apparently that was later on in the 50s brought up in the McCarthy era.
I'm proud to tell you that his name was written up, even though he died 20 years previously, his name was found in the House American Activities.
House on American Activities report?
Report, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah. Joe McCarthy left no stone unturned then.
Yeah, right? He dug him up from the 30s and this was in the 50s.
Some of the research that you've got is really compelling, and a lot of it revolves around, I guess, primary source material that you managed to dig up, letters and so forth.
What I'd like to do now is just take a short moment and allow for a reading of two letters from Bernie to his family, and in particular his mother, regarding his time in the Spanish Civil War. And Lou Dean is going to be reading that.
You are quite angry with me, which makes me very sad. Evidently, you don't understand me yet. There are things and duties in life that are even more important than the family. I think you folks are weak. As for you, Mom, darling, take good care of yourself. All the love I have is yours. I am kissing you now. I had trouble writing this. It's my fifth letter. I tore up the other four. I am very conflicted, going crazy, because I cannot tell whether or not to tell the truth. I spoke to you many times about the struggle of the Spanish workers against the fascist invasion of Hitler and Mussolini of Spain. I tried to explain to you about Spanish mothers trying to protect their children from Nazi bombs. You claimed to be a bitter anti-fascist. If you were really so, it would be quite simple for you to understand then why I and tens of thousands of other anti-fascists from more than 52 nations throughout the world have come here to Spain to do our part of our share in stamping out fascism. I feel exactly as the Spanish workers do. I would rather die than be forced to live in a country under the rule of a Hitler. Spanish cities are being bombed by the Germans, and women and children are fleeing for their lives. I read that 5,000 Basque children are going to New York to be taken care of by workers and working class organizations. and it would certainly make me proud if you were to take care of one of these children. We came here to help the Spanish people, and we're not leaving until we are victorious. The defeat of fascism here will help to keep fascism out of the United States. I am a soldier in the International Brigade, and receiving excellent training and instruction from the best instructors in the world today. There is not much fighting going on right now, but when the Spanish government decides to start, heaven help the fascists.
Your Uncle Bernie went to Spain, fought in the Spanish Civil War, and ultimately was killed in the Spanish Civil War. Can you tell us broadly how you discovered Bernie's fate?
When I started researching about Bernie, the first thing I found was that it was KIA, and I didn't know what that meant. Mm. And so it took some research to find out that KIA meant killed in action, but still I had no knowledge of that, what that meant. Then I found that the article by Harry Fisher, which said that he saw my uncle being walking past him and going to an ambulance, and he never was seen again, and reportedly was bombed by the Luftwaffe. But then I did some more research and found that he was accompanied by someone named John Rohde, who actually saw my uncle, helped my uncle into the ambulance, and then John Rohde walked back away from the ambulance and saw the Luftwaffe coming and went to the ground for shelter and saw the Luftwaffe had bombed the airplane. And that's how Harry Fisher learned that my uncle was killed. Harry Fisher didn't see it directly, and neither did anyone else. Mm. Now, having said that, and that was on, we believe to be July 25th, based on the reported stories I just told you. Now, having said that, there's a book by Carl Geiser that says that my uncle and others were prisoners of the Franco forces in Spain, and that they were executed in July of 1937.
So we actually have two versions of what happened.
And both saying he died in Brunete two months, 2 weeks after he arrived in Spain.
Wow. And one version is he gets bombed in this ambulance. The other version is he's captured by Franco and is summarily executed. So which story do you believe?
Well, it's the who knows? You know, given what we were talking about earlier in the interview about him wising off to the policeman and being a tough guy,
right.
I could see him as being a smart mouth in the if he worked
in
after
a prison.
In a prison, and yeah. I could, but they did it to everybody, so you know, including their own soldiers apparently.
Right.
So I could see that he might have been executed, but equally as well, there's firsthand reports that an ambulance was bombed. So I go with the ambulance. It's
a little easier,
more romantic.
Yeah. Now you're going to Spain this October, right?
for the 75th anniversary of the start of the Spanish Civil War, and we're going to go to Madrid, mm-hmm. Albacete, and to Barcelona.
Right. And are there any survivors that you know that may be there?
Well, that's always a question, because these survivors, these men and women, would be in their mid to upper 90s,
right.
and in very fragile health, and a number of them have died already,
right.
this year. So the ranks are thinning very quickly, and their health may preclude them from joining us.
But in the meantime, you and family
and friends will
keeping
go
the
there.
Memory alive. And keeping the music alive from
and
that period.
And keeping the music
well.
Alive. Yeah. One of the anecdotes about this war is they may have won the war, but we had the better songs.
Amen.
Mercenarios y fascistas, ay Manuela, ay Manuela. Solo es nuestro deseo, solo es nuestro deseo. Acabar con el fascismo, ay Manuela, ay Manuela. Acabar con el fascismo, ay Manuela, ay Manuela.
That concludes our extended hidden history on the Spanish Civil War.
Special thanks today to Lou Dean, the Dean of Richmond Radio, for his voiceover of Uncle Bernie's letters. And also thanks to Dr. Alan Etten, who is a clinical psychologist in Richmond, Virginia, specializing in marriages and family practice.
And thank you to you, Jack, for a wonderful experience doing this. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
And and let me say, I thank you for honoring not only my uncle, but all the people who fought on both sides of the Spanish Civil War.
Ya salimos de España pa luchar en otros frentes, ay Manuela, ay Manuela. Pa luchar en otros frentes, ay Manuela, ay Manuela.